I've got a bit of a cold this week, so bear with me, but this was big enough news going on this week that I didn't want to miss it even a day. We'll jump in. I guess it was Tuesday afternoon, kind of out of the blue. There was an Airport Express firmware update version 7.8 that I really got excited about. I don't know about you, Mayo, but it was a little bit hard to believe. But if anybody was going to believe it, it was going to be me. Apple actually did it. They added AirPlay 2 support to the Airport Express. What do you think, man?
I think this is pretty wild. Like, we've obviously been tracking this on the podcast for ever since iOS 12 came out, essentially. And you were very optimistic. I was less so. And I definitely have egg on my face this time around, at least in terms of the outcome.
Yeah, I think this is reasonable because whereas your reaction is like one of surprise that it happened, but not like surprise that this was on the horizon, and you didn't think it would happen, I was more optimistic that it would happen, and I knew that it's been like kind of floating around there, but I was also like surprised that it happened. I mean, I needed to verify that everything worked before I would like publish the story about it happening. You know, whereas like if this was any other scenario, I would just be like, all right, yeah, cool. Yeah, nice.
Yeah, because when it was in like beta 1, beta 2, and it was just kind of sitting there on the ad accessory screen and nothing happened, it was like, well, probably a bug. And then it added that little alert which says you need an update to the firmware. Then it's like, ooh, maybe it's old code they haven't pulled yet. And then the betas just keep rolling on. And we're at beta 11 now, which is actually a record for the highest number of iOS betas ever. And it still hasn't been pulled. And even on like Monday, we were joking about it. Like,
yeah, I tweeted on Monday, Monday night, beta 11, still here. You know, couldn't believe it.
So you've tested it, and I presume it works just as well as a Sonos or any other third-party AirPlay 2 speaker?
Yeah, so my AirPlay 2 experience goes back to HomePod. You know, have four total right now. I'm using two each in stereo pair. Just I like the stereo sound enough that I'm doing that at the moment, but I change it up sometimes. But that's you know, the HomePod's for AirPlay 2. The Apple TV can do AirPlay 2. Any Apple TV 4K with connected speakers, even the TV speakers can do AirPlay 2. And then I got the Sonos Beam to review, and that was the first AirPlay 2 non-Apple speaker, really. It was like, it doesn't have a music client built in, doesn't have a podcast client built in, even though it can play Apple Music, can't play podcasts, but can play Apple Music. It doesn't have the same Air Music app built into it that HomePod uses and Apple TV uses. So I had some experience with the Sonos Beam, that's the TV soundbar, in the Home app, and using it with AirPlay 2, with HomePod, and with Apple TV, and multi-room, and Siri, control from the iPhone and iPad. So that was neat. With the Airport Express, if you recall, when they discontinued them, I got rid of them and started using mesh routers. And I didn't have any more of these. Like, I literally just gave them to a friend of mine at no cost. It's like, it doesn't have any value to me anymore. And at the time, I was getting really into Sonos, so I wasn't even using the AirPlay stuff, AirPlay 1 stuff. But a few weeks ago, when I was on vacation, I saw on Facebook Marketplace that someone was selling an Airport Express for like 20 or 30 bucks. And at the time, like, we knew that this was floating around in the betas, that you could attempt to add Airport Express to the Home app, but you couldn't do anything with it. And so on a gamble, I bought that for, you know, 20, 30 bucks from the guy locally. And I've had it here on my desk ever since then. And every new beta that comes out, I've tried to launch the Home app and like see, not if the firmware update's available, because I didn't expect that in a beta period, but if the alert dialog for like add the accessory is still there. Because like if it's in beta 2 and it's in beta 11, it's a pretty good sign. And sure enough, it paid off yesterday. The firmware update was out. At first, I thought just for iOS 12, which really wouldn't make any sense, but because it's a firmware update for all users. But that maybe you needed to have iOS 12 for it to work, you know, in the home app. But actually, it's iOS 11 as well. 11.4.1 is the latest version, I think, and it works there as well. But the firmware
update... And just to be clear, you need the second generation AirPort Express, the one that looks like a little Mac Mini, essentially.
Yeah, like just like an Apple TV second gen or third gen, a little flat box, but it's white instead of black. The new Apple TV is taller than that, but it's that same shape. The one that has a cable for power and not just a duck head that goes directly into the wall. It's the second gen 2012 model is what it is. Yeah, I did the firmware update in the AirPort Utility app that is not updated for the iPhone X screen yet, so it's letterboxed. Makes the notch go away. It worked. Got the update. Went back to the home app. Did the add new accessory without code option that you do to make this prompt appear. This time, it actually worked. The first time, it still told me it failed, and I was like, oh no, it's a fluke. But then I tried it again, and it actually worked. And it was like, now let me assign the AirPort Express to a room. And I chose Office. I gave it a name. Eventually landed on iPod Hi-Fi, because that's what I'm using it with. And then from there... Before you could do AirPlay 1, just classic AirPlay, and so you could send audio from the iPhone to the AirPort Express and whatever connected speaker it has with it, but just direct peer-to-peer AirPlay. iTunes on the Mac or PC could do multi-room, but that was a special use case. It wasn't like that on iOS. Once it got AirPlay 2 through this firmware update, then you got a little circle next to it where you could select multiple speakers in any combination, and it works just like Sonos does, in that you can't, you know, play music on the AirPort Express over the internet or a podcast over the internet without a host device. Like HomePod can play on its own and Apple TV can play on its own. But you can talk to Siri on the iPhone or the iPad and say, play my favorites mix on the AirPort Express or whatever you name it. And it'll come from your iPhone to the speaker over AirPlay 2. And it's got the benefits of dramatically reduced latency and affordance for like a phone call or a Wi-Fi interruption without instantly cutting out.
Yeah, and the cool stuff to me is where you can do like move this to the living room, move this to the kitchen, also play this everywhere, you know, only play this here. Like all of that stuff obviously comes along for the ride as well.
Yeah, all that works. And I think just with the firmware update, you get the multi-room stuff where you can use the audio picker and like fill in the circle, select the speaker, multiple speakers. And once you add it to the home app, that's whenever you can do the Siri stuff, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because that is how my Apple TVs work, in that the Apple TVs aren't connected to the home app, as we've talked about before, because they're logged in a different iCloud account. So they appear in the control center view, and you can select them and do it manually for my room, but you can't address them via Siri because they're not aware of it. They're not on the home configuration.
Yeah. And on Reddit before this release came out, like even the day before it came out, you know, people were as interested as I was. Like I wasn't unique in being interested in this. I would just, you know, maybe had a bigger platform, I guess. But there was one Reddit thread that was like as new as Monday about iOS 12 beta 11 that was like, hey, still here, you know. And then there was a thread below that of people like talking in the comments. And this is a new habit I picked up since vacation, which is reading Reddit and reading the comments on Reddit and even like sometimes reading the comments on 95 Mac without getting my feelings hurt. But there was a mention of people kind of guessing, but authoritatively, that the AirPort Express second gen 2012 doesn't have enough RAM to support AirPlay 2 in the buffering that it would need to actually pull it off. And so people were just like, it's not going to happen. You know, don't trust that pop-up dialogue. It's a mistake. And then they were like, you know, what's the source of that? And their response was like, the MFI certification for AirPlay 2 speakers, you know, you can't see it, but like I guess the speaker makers can. And like no one ever like showed their work. Actually, it was just like comments making that claim.
Yeah, and, like second and third end.
Yeah, exactly. And then people were even like looking at like the teardown of what chip does the Express use, and like how much RAM does it actually have. And it was like a, you know, very, very small amount for what it needed. And people were like, that's as much as it can handle with networking requirements and everything. Like it's not going to, you know, and then, you know, Tuesday rolls around the next day and this thing, it actually works. Like you cannot tell a difference between using the Airport Express as an AirPlay 2 speaker, you know, source, or like the Sonos Beam. There's no performance difference.
And it probably does violate the MFI requirements, but obviously the AirPort Express is in the privileged position of being able to not have to go through MFI qualifications. So.
Yeah, plus I think you're allowed to just say on the internet in a comment whatever you want without, you know, backing it up with evidence. Maybe a little bit more there.
Speaking of comments and feedback, after this came out, I tweeted that this is the most discombobulated thing that Apple has done in years. And a lot of people didn't like that. Now,
yeah.
I love feedback and communication, and I'd much rather people express their honest views than say nothing at all. Like, I don't get offended. Like, I just like, you know, having a debate and then considering the options and reassessing and thinking about my own opinion, right? And we're not talking about, like, world hunger here. It's, at the end of the day, technology. So,
yeah.
The stakes are off. But I got a lot of negative response to that. I reassessed. I thought about it a lot. And I still think this whole situation is very, very weird. Now, I said discombobulated. I did not say bad. Bad for Apple. Apple is doomed. Stupid. Any, like, there's a difference. Like, to me, discombobulated is like the left hand's doing something that the right hand isn't. Like, it's uncoordinated. It's so... that it's mixed messaging. Like they announced the discontinuation of the whole AirPort line in April, and it like flabbergasted me that they then bring out like a significant new feature months later, and the AirPort Express is literally sold out. Like the Time Capsule is still in the Apple Store because they haven't used up this stock yet, but the Express is delisted. It's completely gone.
I'll try to maybe save you some room here and make a comparison. It's like the App Store guidelines disallowing calculators as widgets, and the App Store editorial team featuring calculator with a widget. It's like,
yeah, that's a decent parallel.
Yeah, it's like Apple. One part of Apple has said we're not going to sell this thing. There's no need for it anymore. Literally saying that, and then another part of Apple saying, and we're going to give a unique feature to this thing that you can't buy anymore because there's no need for it.
And like them releasing it as a feature means that they're endorsing it as a good feature, right? Otherwise, you wouldn't have done it in the first place. But at the same time, you literally cannot buy this product anymore new. You have to, you know, do a treasure hunt on eBay to try and find one. And they're going to be like scalped like the second generation Apple TVs were because they could be jailbroken and the one after it couldn't. Now the AirPort Express has this like halo god status as this thing that can do a function that no other product, there's no alternative, there's no replacement, there's no substitute. Like you can get these Denon Mantiers receivers, but they're like $600 and you know they plug into like studio speakers. The beauty of the Express is it just has like a headphone jack line in, you just plug it into a thing and plug it into the wall. And you're pretty much done. Like, it's a glorified dongle, but it repeats AirPlay 2 onto a dumb speaker. And that's something that loads of people want. Like, since the HomePod came out, I've seen on Reddit and Twitter and stuff, like, I have these speakers, I want to make them work with the HomePod 2, what can I do? And, it, you know, for months, all you could say was there's no option. We've been kind of hanging around and waiting for Apple to maybe do something like a Chromecast, which is essentially... a Chromecast audio is essentially what an AirPort Express is, you know, just for Android and Google products. And it doesn't happen. But then they come and do this, and it's like, you know, the messaging to me is so, like, so absurd. It's like, this feature is so good, we released it, but you can't get it. And it's not like you can't get the AirPort Express 2 anymore, but you can get the AirPort Express 3. No, because they're not making the new AirPort Express. And... it's not like you can go out and buy today a AirPlay 2 extender from anyone else because there aren't any available. Like, you're just kind of like trapped in this like quagmire of what am I supposed to be doing here? Like, yeah. It, and I got a lot of comments back where it's like, well, they update iOS for the iPhone 5S, like, and they don't sell the iPhone 5S anymore. And it's like, sure, but that's different. Like, when you add an iOS update to an older iPhone, you're making the people that have that older phone happy, which encourages them, which makes them more likely to buy a new iPhone when they come up to upgrade, and you're expanding the app ecosystem because developers can make apps that target all the new APIs and the latest operating systems and have a base of millions and millions of customers, not just the people with the latest devices. But here, you've cut off the platform, right? Like, you've told everybody you're not selling any more AirPods. You're done.
Yeah.
And then you bring out this feature, which if you happen to be one of the people who, do have an AirPod Express, is great. Like, you're singing to the moon. But if you're not, then you're like, what the heck am I supposed to be doing here? Like, it just feels like such a weird, uncoordinated situation.
Yeah, Apple's answer is buy a HomePod or by one of these receivers that gets updated with AirPlay 2, like the one you mentioned. The idea of a receiver is that you've got speakers that you literally need something to drive to get audio from. And in the case of the AirPort Express, it's that the speakers, like the stereo system, probably works on its own. You just want to add this AirPlay feature to it. So you don't need to spend $600 on like a separate, driver for it. Like just today, Sonos announced, their second generation amp, which adds like Sonos's wireless features to dumb stereos. And it also happens to work with AirPlay 2, but it's like $600 and it doesn't come out until next February, 2019. Unless you're like a pro audio dealer, then you get it this fall, like early. But it's like, that's not the same as like $100 box that adds AirPlay 2 to any speaker. Now, there's a few things about this. Like, one is, should Apple sell just a box that does this? Like,
yes.
Regardless of like how the HomePod does or like any successor, should Apple or, a partner like Belkin or Logitech do something that just does this? You say yes. I agree. I say yes too, because it's kind of a niche edge case that people would want to upgrade existing hardware like stereo systems for this feature versus buy an AirPlay 2 speaker that like is like an all-in-one solution. It's almost like this is like the Mac Mini, of the computers versus like an iMac. You need other stuff to use this, to get benefit out of this. So it's kind of edge case, not really consumer friendly. It's like, okay, so do that. But then would it cost $100 or, like take the AirPort Express and remove all the networking stuff about it? Because the way that people are using this, sometimes it's as their router. But in my case, I've got a much better router system that, is the reason that this router is going away or has gone away. And so I'm using this as an accessory on the network and not as my router or even to extend my network at all. Like, it just joins my network and then does the AirPlay 2 stuff. And I don't think that accessory would cost $100. I think, if you took out all the networking stuff from this, you could reduce the cost and maybe sell it for $50 or so.
And it'd be simpler product. Like, you don't have to, because at the moment you have to make sure you put it in, like client access point mode,
yeah,
and connect to your existing router and change all the settings. Like, it essentially, the product that you're envisioning is, essentially a dongle that just,
right,
is basically like a Bluetooth repeater, except it's, Wi-Fi for the AirPlay 2 compatibility.
Yeah, it would have LAN in and LAN out and USB sharing for printers. And, it's a lot different than what this is. And so it's nice that this, outdated product got updated. And a lot of people were making reference to old Apple. They're like, this is old Apple being generous and updating, a product from the old days. It's like, it is very friendly to do this, and I'm so happy it came true. It's just also confusing that, you literally can't buy even a refurbished model from Apple. And people have asked me, do you think that there will be an AirPort Express 3, in September or next year? And it's like, no, I think Apple's messaging was super clear that they're not in the router business for any reason at all. They were already things that they were doing that no one else matches, like Time Capsule for Time Machine Backup, Airport Express for AirPlay 1 and now AirPlay 2. The printer sharing stuff, you can buy an AirPort printer and you know, get around that.
Yeah, an AirPrint is a much better solution to the plugging a USB to the old printer, which didn't work with iOS ever, et cetera. Like, that's easily superseded by something better.
Yeah, exactly. And their answer for AirPlay before was buy an AirPlay speaker. And that's coming to market too, even with AirPlay 2, but not with your existing stereo. And I think it's reasonable to have a stereo made 30 years ago that sounds fine and want to use it today, like, you know, with Apple Music, for example. So I think there's definitely room for a solution that AirPort Express second gen is serving today, except you've got to really go through a hassle to find one.
Except you can't buy it.
Yeah, cause you can't buy it from Apple. Like even Best Buy, I wrote a piece a few weeks ago that was like, you know, just pondering, will Apple do this? And like weighing the pros and cons, you know, the optimistic view and then your view. And it was like, you know, at the time, there were at least refurbished units from Best Buy, and now those are all gone. And those were like Apple sold their refurbs, I think, for maybe $49, which is like way lower than usually what they do refurbs for. And Best Buy was like $80, but still, like, they were available to order online. And like you can do eBay. If you bother with Facebook, I found that Facebook Marketplace is really a good resource for this because people sell them for like $20 and $30. Like even today and yesterday, I looked online and there were still these options. I was like, wow, people don't care, don't know, you know. These are just like old routers that people don't need anymore. But if you need them for this, then it's worth probably $50 to you, you know, maybe more than that. But I don't predict that we'll see like this solution come anytime soon. I don't know what you think.
Yeah. I don't think Apple's going to make one, but they might like hand off to, you know, Logitech or something and just make an AirPlay 2 repeater little box type of thing.
Yeah, it's like Logitech and Belkin, you know, those parties, they couldn't do it now on their own, right? But Apple could, you know, help them do it.
Yeah, because all the AirPlay 2 stuff needs to be approved by Apple, essentially.
And I think AirPlay 1 has been reverse engineered in a way that, like, you can buy a Raspberry Pi that does AirPlay 1, but AirPlay 2 is not in that camp yet.
Yeah, and I don't believe AirPlay 2 encryption has been cracked yet. So
yeah. And another response I saw yesterday was people upset that the AirPort Extreme and Time Capsules were not updated, even though they're more expensive and are also in the same category of being discontinued.
But they don't have a port.
Yeah, the simple thing there is they never had the port for you know, connecting a stereo. It was like that was unique to the Express. So, you know, that's a simple explanation there. And in terms of like why this happened, my best guess is that when AirPlay 2 was announced in June 2017, there was already work being done for this. Like, it was just intent, you know, even though the Express was outdated, it wasn't dead yet. And so that's the AirPort Express like test product, you know, really. Like there was HomePod, but then there was also this AirPort Express.
Yeah, because even back then, they could have been working on a hardware update that got later canned.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, Mark's reporting at Bloomberg was like much earlier that the team was disbanded, but you could still see like the people doing AirPlay would experiment with AirPort Express and then presumably like release it in September when AirPlay 2 came out with iOS 11. But then AirPlay 2 got delayed by 11 and a half months, you know. From the announcement, at least. And in the meantime, like come April, Apple discontinued all of their AirPort products. And it's like, if you did most of the work, like obviously it wasn't finished yet, or maybe it wasn't released yet until HomePod got some time on the market. Like all that could be a factor.
Well, in April, the AirPlay 2 wasn't out.
Right. But AirPlay 2 has been out for a while now in this update.
Yeah, like it didn't come out day in date with 11.4, for instance.
Exactly. Even though it was in some of the, like, at least one of the betas for 11.4, like with different, you know. I think even in iOS 11 beta, you could find assets for AirPort Express. in around, you know, HomeKit assets. Like the icon for it was in there, even though this alert dialogue was not. So like that's my best guess is that like the work was already done independent of when, you know, management says we're going to kill the whole line, and you could stop all work on it, or you could, I don't know, like the backstory, but like weaken project it or something, and then it's done. So then release it. Like, I think that's definitely like the right thing to do. And a lot of people are happy over that. It's just like you say, it is confusing. And it's like, Apple, there's a few options. Like Apple will release a new Airport Express 3. No, don't have to do that. Apple, you know, not release AirPlay 2 for Airport Express. That's also like was a possibility and like more likely. But what they're doing,
if they'd have done that, I don't think anyone would have been crying. Like,
right? Yeah, it would have been like that was,
you know,
a weird
like people
teaser.
Weren't expecting it.
Right. It was like that was a weird teaser, but like, you know, it's logical. But the other thing that Apple could do that I think is would be possible is keep making these and sell them for $100 or sell them for $80, and then say we're not going to update it like hardware wise. And we're going to keep like supporting it through security updates and everything, but like don't expect new features, but we have AirPlay 2 for it and you can still buy it. Like that would be more logical than you can't buy it and there's this killer new feature for it, you know.
And a cool like little tidbit here is that if you find the web page for the AirPort 7.8 firmware, it actually says posted December 12th, 2017.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's just like a weird bug or if it was originally planned to come out before Christmas, but you can kind of like imagine a scenario inside Apple where, you know, late in last year, they'd looked over their product lineup and they were like, oh, we don't want to carry on with the AirPort line anymore. And then someone's like, well, we have this AirPlay 2 thing in the wings. And it's like, yeah, kill that. And then it just kind of gets shelved. And then times go by, and at some point someone was like, we've got this, why don't we release it? And then someone kind of finally agreed, and then it, you know, comes out like it does now. Completely unrelated timing to anything. I think if they wanted to smooth this over, at the April announcement of them discontinuing it, they could have said at that time, we will be releasing AirPlay 2 support for the Express and then ending the product line. Because then if you really wanted one, you had that, you know, month, 2 month time period where they were depleting their stock, but you could still go and get one.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's doubly weird that they didn't mention it at all then. And we even asked them, right? We asked PR about this.
I ask and I get answers to a lot of things these days, but that was not something that I got any answer on background or even any, it was no response at all.
Yeah. So we tried, lads, we tried, but, yeah, like that kind of makes it super wonky to me. And what I expect is the weird disconnect that we see externally in the timeline was also happening internally. And,
yeah,
you know, the engineers were getting it done at the same time higher ups were announcing that it was dead. And then it comes out in the wash like this.
Yeah. So I've got the one, and the way I'm using it is, like I said, I've got the iPod Hi-Fi, which was like, you know, Apple's first speaker. It wasn't a smart speaker, but it was just, it has a dock on the top with a 30 pin connector for iPods and then later iPhones. So you can, you know, it was Apple's answer to Bose doing the same thing, like a speaker dock. And they made it for a few months and they discontinued it. And then that was it. And then years later we have the HomePod. Well, the iPod Hi-Fi, the main input method was the 30 pin connector, and that's outdated. And so it also has a line in port in the back. And so you can use that with the Airport Express to do now AirPlay 2. And it's a decent speaker. Like the HomePod, I prefer the sound of the HomePod. Like it's a smaller speaker. And one HomePod, I don't think is as good as one iPod Hi-Fi, but the iPod Hi-Fi is not as good as two HomePods in like a stereo, you know, arrangement. And you couldn't like pair iPod Hi-Fi for like a stereo arrangement if you wanted to. But as like a speaker that exists, like it's not bad. And as a novelty, it's pretty neat, like a part of Apple history. And to have AirPlay 2 work with it is just really cool. Like, now there's no setback against it. I've literally got an iPod on top of it, a white iPod on top of it with a click wheel, just for like, you know, collector's sake.
like show.
Yeah, exactly. And there's music synced on it. Like, I could play music that way, the old-fashioned way. But I can also tell Siri on the HomePod to play music everywhere, and it will play on the iPod Hi-Fi. Or I could even say to the Siri on the HomePod, play music on the iPod Hi-Fi, and it will work. You know, same for Siri on the iPhone and the iPad. Again, the AirPlay 2 Siri stuff doesn't work from the watch or from the Mac yet, but it does work from the HomePod, Apple TV, iPhone and iPad and iPod Touch. So, you know, it's like so much more valuable today than it was. My iPod Hi-Fi was actually in the closet before this AirPlay 2 update because it was like, I don't want to do AirPlay 1. You know, that's as old as the iPod Hi-Fi now.
Yeah.
But
the watch and the Mac OS not having AirPlay 2 properly is very stupid.
Yeah, to be updated in the future, hopefully, you know.
But well, at least they haven't discontinued macOS yet.
Yeah. So, you know, like I said, like I was kind of like all over this thing. Like I even, you know, bought hardware so I could test it. You know, if it were to come to pass, and it did, and it's amazing. Like before AirPower comes out, or before even like an AirPort utility app update comes out for iPhone X, this happened and it works.
Yeah, like you literally update it with letterboxed app UI.
Uh-huh. And let's use the Mac. Which even the Mac app looks old. Like it's got that gradient background. It's like Steve Jobs keynote slides.
Yeah. Well, I still think it's funky messaging, but it's very good news for people that have them or can acquire them in the near future.
Yep.
And I can't wait for the HomePod to get discontinued so we get multiple timers.
There's something Apple does, which is sell hardware that they don't update. You know, like, I mean, kind of Mac, like MacBook Air gets updates, but like for the longest time, they sold iPods and those never got updated. Like the iPod Nano looked like iOS 6, for example. And in this case, they're updating hardware that they don't sell anymore. It's like the inverse of that. It's like, which is better? I don't know, but this is cool for me. There are three more Airport Expresses within, say, 100 miles of me. Each one costs below $40, and I'm thinking I might make arrangements. So, I don't know. But they're out there, folks. If you really care enough, you can probably find one. I don't know that I actually need more than one, though, so I think, I don't know if I'll do that or not, but... Anyway, AirPlay 2, Airport Express. Who knew, Mayo? Who knew?
Incredible.
This week, 9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by Text Expander from Smile. Simply put, Text Expander helps you communicate smarter. If you're not familiar with Text Expander, it's a simple but powerful app that lets you create snippets for things you frequently type or copy and paste over and over again. You can make snippets for short things you type all the time, like email addresses, website URLs, and even today's date. Or you can create snippets for longer entries like directions, reference requests, proposals, or even answers to common questions. You can summon these snippets in any app on the Mac, Windows, iPhone, and iPad using a simple abbreviation. Or you can search your snippets using a hotkey while you're typing. You can even power up your whole team by sharing snippets. I've personally been a Text Expander customer for years. I cannot imagine using my Mac without Text Expander. And frankly, it's way more powerful than any of the built-in alternatives. There's no typing and waiting to see if your shortcut worked. Just type your snippet and instantly watch your short text expand into the correct text. For example, I use semicolon lowercase d to format the current date for file names on every podcast episode with digits, then semicolon capital D to format the current date with the month spelled out for every episode of 9 to 5 Mac Daily. I also have short text snippets for the complete HTML formatted text that goes into every podcast post. I simply type 925H for happy hour and 925D for 9 to 5 Mac Daily. Then fill in the show notes and links and post. This saves me a ton of time from having to think about the current date and copy and paste the same post template day after day. A few other tricks I use daily include my S9 snippet for typing out site :9to5mac.com, for searching Google for specific past stories, and Gcache for appending http://webcache.googleusercontent.com/search?q=cache:. That's a mouthful, before a URL to easily access the Google cached version of a site for comparing changes for stories. I even use text snippets to correctly spell common Apple executive names like Angela Arendt and Luca Maestri without embarrassing myself with typos. These are tasks I cannot imagine doing manually anymore, and there's nothing quite like Text Expander out there. So visit textexpander.com/podcast for 20% off your first year and select 9to5 Mac Happy Hour in the Where Did You Hear About Text Expander section to let Smile know you came from the show and support the podcast. Again, that's textexpander.com/podcast and select 9to5 Mac Happy Hour to save 20% off your first year and even more time saved typing. Our thanks to Text Expander for sponsoring 9to5 Mac Happy Hour. By now, the iPhone event has probably been announced. That's my guess. We're recording on Wednesday, so it hasn't happened yet. But my guess, as of 5 p.m. Central on a Wednesday, August 29th, is that around 12 lunchtime Eastern on Thursday, the invites go out. That's my guess. So, you know.
I would agree with that. And there's no way that it will be next week. I should never say no way anymore because I clearly have a terror. I'm clearly completely shot to the ground. But yeah, I've been expecting Wednesday or Thursday for this. So either today or tomorrow for a few weeks now. And obviously today's over. So
yeah,
tomorrow looking like invites are going out.
Indeed. And I think we're probably both in agreement that September the 12th, the Wednesday, would be the event day.
Yeah.
10 a.m. California time at Steve Jobs Theater.
Yep.
Yep. And they never called an iPhone event. It's a special event. So,
yeah. Hey. Well, they don't just do the iPhone.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there was that one time where they had, I think it was iPhone 5, where they said, let's talk iPhone. And they just had like the four app icons. And that was all they did. But that is going back in history now. Like all the recent events, they
iPhone 4S.
They love to, you know, put more stuff in.
Yeah, I want to say that was iPhone 4S. Maybe.
Maybe?
Maybe it was 5. It was 5. You're probably right. Yeah. And they had like a map icon. That's a pretty good one with the date and the clock. That's clever.
Yeah, I think that was kind of the last time they did just iPhone events.
Yeah.
I bet you're right. I bet that was watches and all sorts of other stuff with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I bet that was. And it had a shadow of a 5, right?
Yes.
And there was all that pent-up demand of like, I want an iPhone 5, and then we got a 4S. And it was like, no, this is really the 5. This is it. This is it. So, yeah.
Okay. So that was 2012, basically. So that was the last. So we're a long way from that now.
Yeah, a long way from that. But in the meantime, we've got iPhone rumors to play around in. And it starts out this week with, I think, Mark Gurman and Debbie Wu at Bloomberg with a story on, like inside baseball of like how Apple's been thinking about naming these things and then what you should expect from them. So tell me about that.
Yeah, so a lot of recap of stuff Quo has said before and, you know, the general rumor mill consensus. But there was some cool bits. Like, we haven't really heard anything about, like, the new iPhone cameras. And, like, we haven't really heard any specifics on iPhone camera changes. I think everyone's just kind of assumed that there will be camera improvements because there are camera improvements every year. Gurman specifically calls out that this year we'll have camera improvements and speed upgrades because they try and frame this lineup as like an S year if you're excluding the fact that there's actually new form factor phones. Like, I kind of get where they're coming from and I kind of don't, because you could just look at the 5.8 inch 2018 iPhone and that is an S upgrade,
yeah,
to the iPhone 10. Who knows? They might even just keep calling it iPhone 10 and just call it the new iPhone 10, maybe. Mm-hmm. And then you take that same design and make the screen bigger, and you have the 6.5-inch iPad phone, essentially. And then you just take a few of the things out, of the 5.8-inch phone, make it slightly bigger, and you've got the 6.1-inch LCD phone. So the S-year framing, and this report specifically says that Apple employees inside the company have been calling it an S-year. I get it. There's no way in my head that they're actually going to call these things S-phones. I think they're going to want to make them seem, you know, like flagship standalone things.
On that note, like, when we talk about these things, we say like iPhone 10, iPhone 10 Plus, iPhone 9, just like quick reference points so we know what we're talking about and not just using the inches and the screen types to note these. It always occurs to me that, like, if it is iPhone 10 modifier, then it would be iPhone 10 modifier plus if it were iPhone 10 Plus. And it's like, this is too much to explain, like, you know, do every time. But I agree. Like, I don't think that it will be called S, but I also don't even want to make a prediction at what I think it will be, because I never would have guessed iPhone 8 number, iPhone 10 Roman numeral.
Yeah.
it's so pointless. Apple comes up with the craziest naming schemes, so it's so pointless. Like, I wouldn't have called the iPhone 8. It would have been the iPhone 7S. Like, totally, to me, it would have been. I get that you can argue it's a new casing, sort of, but the naming is just so whatever marketing needs it to be that year. I don't even want to guess, you know?
Yeah, there's no connection to, like, the actual features, really. And even if you want to look at the pattern of Apple's marketing choices, this last year they've really broken up it. So there's nothing historical, I think, you can really say where they did this year and they did that year after. So that's what's going to happen now.
Right.
They did say in this report that Apple has pondered dropping the plus modifier, so maybe that does open it up to having like iPhone XS, because then you're not also having to say XS plus. That could happen. I mean, if you look at their other products, they don't use plus on the MacBook Pro. Like, you just have 13 inch or 15 inch MacBook Pro, you have 11 inch, 10.5 inch, 12.9 inch iPad Pro. Like, you don't have iPad Pro plus. Yeah. So that would line up just to unify the words, essentially.
Yeah, and I don't think that the concern of iPhone XS being pronounced by the masses as XS, which sounds like excess, which has a bad connotation, I'm not sure that's like a reason not to do that. Even XS pronounced correctly sounds like tennis. You know, 5S looked like SS, like, you know, and that's when they dropped to lowercase after the 4S was capital S. It's like, you know, there are all kinds of reasons like why you wouldn't name something the way Apple does, but who would have guessed HomePod? And like, there's even an iPad, like, there's problematic names that they go with, and they become, you know, normal to us. Even
iPad was a huge thing at the time, right? Yeah. And then even iPhone 10, everyone saw iPhone X and said iPhone expensive. Like, that was a huge joke on Twitter for like that day.
And now I see a Tesla Model X, and I read it in my mind as like automatic autocorrect Tesla Model 10. And I'm like, oh wait, no, that's iPhone 10. And it's like, you know, you just get used to the stuff. Even if there's like risk to it at first, it becomes norm. So I don't think XS is like rolled out for the reason of sounding like excess or XS. I'm more convinced that S is risky and that it makes it sound like a skip year, you know.
Which it isn't for the other two phones.
Yeah, for the two phones, like, I would not look at those and say S, because like, and on the middle sized phone, which is very large, a traditional S phone wouldn't drop features. It would only make improvements, you know, like big improvements. And in this case, it drops some features. Like, even if you're coming from an iPhone 8, you know, and the rumor is you lose 3D touch, like, you're losing a feature in that case. You know, and for the really big phone, then it's an improvement over the last one plus bigger, you know. It's like it's an S revision of a phone that didn't exist anymore in that size class. It's like, not really.
Yeah, like, if you see it as a direct sibling, or like a direct successor to the 5.5-inch plus, like, it's a massive change, right? You're going from a 5.5-inch screen with massive forehead and chin to, you know, really, really slim bezels with a 6.5-inch screen. Yeah. Like,
which is why I which is why I just call like prediction bankruptcy, and I don't know, you know, yeah. But I'm ready to be surprised.
The iPhone 9 name, I think we should talk about this on the show before. I wouldn't expect them to call it iPhone 9 either, because they've already skipped the number to go to 10, and the iPhone, quote-unquote, 9 is enough of a 10 design that I don't think they want to undersell it and call it like a lesser number.
Yeah, it's an iteration of the 10. It even has a, you know, based on the rumors, a faster processor than the iPhone 10 does. So it's not the what you skipped to get to 10 between 8 and 10. That would not have that processor. It's like it's kind of clever to think about it that way, but you know it's not like exactly what you get. It's literally, you know, names aside, it's a compromise phone. Like you take things out to get to a cost, and then you keep some things in to make it new. Like, and that's awesome. That
yeah, and you're definitely keeping the most critical parts of what the iPhone 10 appeal is, right?
Sure.
Thin bezels, bigger screen and smaller body.
Yeah,
like Face ID, tap to wait, blah blah blah. Like the best bits are what they're keeping. Like the OLED versus LCD difference, most people don't care. The only big 3D touch, that's kind of a bummer. But the only big thing I think is like the difference in camera. Like this is going to keep the single camera like the old iPhone 8 does. Uh-huh. That's like the only place where it's really like meaningfully different, I think, for the average right. customer.
Yeah. You know, but it's also big. It's big, right? So yeah, the names, like, I don't think there's like a clear answer that's super obvious that doesn't have like illogical parts to it. And so they're going to name it like what markets well and like what tests well. I wouldn't be surprised if it's something I'm not thinking of, you know? And so I'm going to be like, if it's something that, like, if they say iPhone 9, iPhone 10 and iPhone 10 plus, then I'll be like, what, you know, I'm kind of surprised by that. I think it will be something that I'm not thinking of, you know, in that regard. So is there anything else from Bloomberg that's worth mentioning this week?
They just backed up the dual SIM situation where the two larger phones, the 6.1 and 6.5 inch, will have dual SIM options in select regions. So again, we saw some like Chinese reports that it would be on the 6.1, then some other Chinese reports that it would be on 6.5, and now both Bloomberg and Meiji Kuo are saying dual SIM on both the larger phones in select markets. So yeah, it's not going to be like the iPhone you buy in the US will necessarily have two SIM card slots, but maybe yeah, the one in China does.
So that was Monday. And then on Tuesday, Ming-Chi Kuo had a new research note for TF International Securities, in which like the headline stuff for me was that he's this close to the event, he's still seeing that the 6.1-inch iPhone won't come out at the same time, you know, probably as the 5.8-inch iPhone and the 6.5-inch iPhone. This is the LCD model that will come out later, versus last year, the LCD model is being on time, and then the iPhone 10 OLED model being later. He doesn't say, like, a month later, 2 months later. He says, like, a little later, I believe. So it sounds like, you know, these new iPhones come out at the end of September, then it could be like, oh, maybe 2 weeks later, or like, you know, maybe it's a month later, but like maybe it's not early November like it was last year.
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be a repeat of the iPhone 10, but if it's early October, that goes, oh, early October, that sounds bad, but you know, the other iPhones come out basically the last week of September anyway, so it's not even that far apart really.
Right. And it's not so bad for Apple that the more expensive ones with the higher, you know, the higher selling price ones come out first. And then you get to, you know, I imagine you can pre-order at the same time like you could last year. But like if you walk into a store, you can't buy the cheaper one that looks new too. And in some cases is bigger. So there's some accidental benefits of that too. He also
said, I don't think that makes a huge difference. I think people are smart enough, like if they want this one, they'll just wait the extra week or whatever. Like,
yeah, it's kind of an impulse thing, but I think it is some factor of like the 10 might not look new this year unless you want gold, but the what we call iPhone 9 for now will look newer because it's got more colors and is actually bigger, even though it drops some things. So like,
I think people will be waiting for the colors, like,
yeah,
and as long as you're out you know, well in time for the holidays, which none of these reports are saying it's so dire it's going to be like another November repeat. I think, you know, you'll sail through and it'll just be, oh, the sales didn't come last week. It's September. They came middle of October instead. Oh, big deal. Here we go. Like, it doesn't, in the scheme of things, I don't think that really makes much of a difference on overall purchasing decisions.
Yeah. I suppose, but it affects the quarter results a little bit if they have the calendar Q3, some iPhone 10 and 10 Plus sales, but then you don't have any of the iPhone 9 sales until the calendar Q4.
Yeah, although if you, again, compare year over year, you're not going to have a problem because the iPhone 10 didn't come out in this quarter either.
Yeah, that's true. So
yeah. And they've already guided for record revenue expectations, so yeah. I think they're going to be sitting pretty on the sales of the $1,000, $1,100 phones by themselves.
They're going to make some money. The other thing,
also, that gold color coming to iPhone 10,
yeah,
is going to look really nice because it's going to have a black front.
Mm-hmm. That's true. The other thing Quo says is that he doesn't believe, despite I think it was TrendForce and DigiTimes earlier in the month saying that the iPhone 10 or the 10 Plus and the 10 would work with the Apple Pencil, he thinks none will work with the Pencil this year. And he cites a poor user experience as the reason. That's tricky because it's like, remember when Quo said that the Apple Watch wouldn't work with phone calls? And, you know, it's like, and he cited, you know, the user experience, like wanting to improve it first with apps. It's like, that wasn't correct. You know, I think he said VoIP would work, but not phone calls. Like, that wasn't correct. So some of this stuff is like, you know, we'll see. But the fact is, like, the Pencil stuff wasn't rumored strongly anyway, and it's not been backed up by, like, Bloomberg, for example. And so, you know, Quo is probably correct here. We probably won't see Pencil support this year.
Yeah, and I was kind of down on the idea anyway. Like, I don't think.
Well, we learned.
I think the demand for phones with styluses is kind of overblown. Like, if you just look at the market, very, very few people buy the Note 9 because it has a stylus. Like, they might buy the Note 9 because it's got a big screen. But even then, Samsung's flagship phones are the Galaxy series, and they sell well more than the Notes do. So I don't think the stylus is something people are really, like, demanding for. Whereas they probably are demanding for bigger screens, or maybe even dual SIMs, which is what Apple did in dual SIMs for the first time. But I don't think the Pencil's at a situation where it really makes sense for Apple to invest in it, because they're definitely not doing a Note style phone where they have a holster in the phone for you to put the Pencil and the style, right, and all that jazz. Like, it would, that what we're considering here is an optional accessory you can buy that you can work with it and then store it somehow else. So I think there's a lot of reasons to that, you know, just kind of maybe they'll do it eventually, but it doesn't seem like a priority at all.
Okay. And the other thing Quo mentions, he doesn't mention this in text in his research note, but he does include a nice graph that he lists what he projects will be the resolutions for each screen size. So he's long predicted these, you know, another 5.8-inch screen OLED, a new 6.1-inch LCD screen, and a new 6.5-inch OLED screen. Now, is this for the first time? Is including resolutions for each as well?
Yeah, the 6.5-inch resolution was floated by somebody else before, but this is the first time I've seen any naming of a 6.1-inch resolution.
Yeah.
So, this is kind of interesting, actually. So, the 6.5-inch Quo agrees with that previous rumor going around, which is 2688 by 1242. And then he says the 6.1-inch is 1792 by 828. Now, the first thing that hit my mind is, wow, that's a big PPI drop for the LCD phone. It's 300. It works out to about 323, 324, which is basically the same as what the iPhone 8 is. So if you're expecting because the OLED phones have higher PPI, but also a lot of people say that you need high PPI to offset the quality degradation you get with the AMOLED diamond pentile pixel layout type of thing, so it kind of offset a little bit, but you are, you know, there are more pixels per inch, like that's what the number, right, means.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not going to mirror that on the 6.1-inch phone because it's LCD, and obviously they're trying to keep prices down, right? So it'd probably be silly of them to put a higher resolution screen on there anyway, so it'd be comparable to the iPhone 8. But the big thing here is, if you actually look at those numbers, those overall resolutions, that works out to 896.x414 at 3x for the 6.5 inch. So this means retina scale 3. So everything appears as a point, but for every point, there are 3x pixels, right? Whereas the iPhone 4, iPhone 8 in between are all 2x resolution. And if you look at the 6.1 inch resolution, that is exactly 896x414 at 2x. So what it's looking like is you'll be able to see the exact same content on the 6.1 inch phone and the 6.5 inch phone. It will just be that the 6.5 inch is sharper. So you'll still have the same number of rows in an email list, or you'll see the same amount of a website, but like the text will be sharper, for instance.
It'll also be physically bigger because it's the same resolution, but bigger. And so by bigger, it needs to be sharper to not be fuzzy.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's the same logical resolution, but obviously more actual pixels, which makes it higher pixel density.
Yeah.
So what you could see here is that both the 6.1 inch and the 6.5 inch have that landscape mode. You know, like what all the pluses do, you can go into and you get like the sidebar on email, you get the sidebar on calendar.
Yeah.
It seems like that they're going to put that same interface landscape home screen on the 6.1 inch phone as well.
Yeah. And that would be like the iPad mini, RIP, and the 9.7 inch iPad, where it's the same amount of content on the screen, just the size of it is physically different, right?
Yes.
Which would be kind of like, it's a little bit odd, and this is just an interesting thing to come to. Like, I didn't do the math. You did the math on this one. Quote it and even like lay it out like this. You just did the math, and then here we go. But it's like, for the cheaper phone, you might be able, I mean, we already know it's going to be bigger, so it makes sense that you could probably see more content on it. But it's like, for the cheaper phone in the flagship lineup and the most expensive phone, you'll probably be able to see more content than the iPhone X.
Yeah.
But it's the same amount of content. You know, both are more, but it's the same, which is an odd difference.
Yeah, there is a slight, like the mini and the normal, when it was like iPad Air, iPad Mini,
yeah,
that was the exact same resolution, but smaller.
Right.
Whereas the this is the same logical resolution, but you're getting 3x pixel scaling on the big one and 2x pixel scaling on the small one.
Mm-hmm.
So it is slightly different, but effectively you're going to be seeing the same thing on both.
Right. At a glance, it's the same. It's
one. Yeah, and you'd obviously assume that the 6.5 inch plus will be getting the regular size class in landscape with the sidebars and stuff.
Yeah.
And it would naturally follow that if you're just going by a resolution that's displayed on screen, that the 6.1 inch would get that as well. That is likely, I'd say, but it's not like intrinsically tied to the screen resolution. Apple can pick whatever size class they want for all these products. Like theoretically, the iPhone X could have had a sidebar as well,
mm-hmm,
because in terms of surface area, the screen is bigger than the Plus.
There's a why, because it's tall.
Yeah, and the argument there is they didn't do that because it's not so wide, so it's skinnier, and then if you go horizontal, you get very little vertical space when you're in landscape.
Yeah.
They could make the same argument for the 6.1 inch phone if they wanted to and still reserve it as a Plus feature.
Sure.
But that would be kind of interesting if like the mainstream flagship $700 iPhone suddenly got all these like sidebars and stuff that have been, you know, quote-unquote like pro tier until now.
Which, by the way, I don't know if you've ever used a Plus phone and actually used those modes, but I think they're worse than what you get on like the iPhone 8 and iPhone 10.
Yeah, they're not great.
Yeah, in landscape, you get a better like full screen experience without having the bar cramp up your space. And it's like, is there that much more benefit to having a scrollable sidebar and then at the cost of like the main content? I don't think so. So I don't know if people love that. And like the keyboard also is already weird on like the 10 in landscape mode. And it's always been weird in Plus. Like they used to have those buttons where you could cut, copy, and paste. And they took those away and they just did like space there, which I think might be better. And I imagine that like that says the same too. But it's like, It's neat that you've come to these numbers and we can discuss this like hypothetically. In practice, I don't like that mode at all. Like, if you could toggle it off system wide, usually the apps have like a double arrow button where you can like go full screen and then return to like the better experience, in my opinion. If you could toggle it off like system wide, I totally would.
Yeah.
Because it's not like two apps side by side, two apps stacked on top of each other. It's make your app smaller to see a side view that you might not care about, you know.
Yeah, the only thing I really like on the pluses is the landscape home screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is complicated because it rearranges your apps, like it's not the same number of rows, you know, etc.
Yeah, I don't know how many times I've said this. I want, when I turn my iPhone 10 into landscape, I want just the icons to rotate 90 degrees and everything else not to move, so that it would stay in place, but it would just be like all of the artwork is now facing the right way. Like, they wouldn't move around. The text would still be the other way up. The grid hasn't changed. It's just the icons facing, you know, upwards.
I think that's more logical, yeah. I mean, your rows change the columns that are weird, but it's like, you know, physically the icons are in the same place. They're just rotated. The other thing is on the Plus phones, you get Landscape Siri, which you don't get on the iPhone 10 and iPhone 8, even though you can use Siri and or you can use landscape apps like, you know, Messages, I believe, and you know, definitely like Safari, for example. Siri still defaults to being in portrait orientation, which is not a big difference. But if I'm making a screenshot for a story, it's really nice to get a landscape Siri screenshot versus the portrait one, just for like the way the web is laid out and everything. But that's a small difference. So yeah, it's gonna be...
One last thing I just want to expound here is that on the Plus, this is so complicated. The current Pluses render at a different resolution to what the screen is, because the screen is 1920 by 1080,
yeah,
but it renders at like 2208 by 1240, something like that. And then it shrinks it down a little bit for a non-integer scaling, just like what all the new MacBook Pros do, where they default to more space, but obviously the physical screen resolution is not. So you're actually getting like a slightly blurrier screen, but it's so minute because the pixel density is so high, most people generally don't notice. I hate that stuff. But with this phone, they're going to go back to clean one-to-one integer scaling. And I'm so happy to see that go out of the iPhone lineup.
Other thing that we got this week was, like one mention in a Barclays research note, I believe, that kind of throws out the idea of 3D touch going away in the future. And it's weird because this year, Ming-Chi Kuo has said that 3D touch won't be in the 6.1-inch LCD iPhone, you know, presumably as a cost-saving measure, but that there's no change in the 5.8-inch iPhone. Why would there be? And there's no change in the new 6.5-inch iPhone. It'll also have 3D Touch as a premium feature. But that it won't be in the cheaper one. And Barclays, like, the reference wasn't strong, but the analyst kind of, like, he did not say it. It was just kind of confusing. But it was basically saying, like, next year, don't expect the supplier to be making 3D Touch parts for any phone. And that's like just a whole weird thing. Like it's a single line. It was obscure. So I don't want to like take it and run with it too much. But, you know, if true, you know, if accurate, then there could be the possibility of 3D Touch being replaced by like the next version of 3D Touch with a new, like some new way to trigger it. Or we saw, you know, a little while ago from Bloomberg a report about, you know, some hover gesture that, you know, makes sense to us that could be like the replacement for 3D Touch in the future. What do you think about all this?
Yeah, like, I think 3D Touch is too useful to just scrap it. Like, it has interface problems, many of which we talked about before in the show. Like, if you're on the home screen, you want to delete an app, but you accidentally press too hard, you enter 3D Touch, and people don't have a clue what's going on, and then they get lost, and then if you tell them what to do, they still can't do it reliably. Like, and in other places, people complain that 3D Touch isn't discoverable enough. Those arguments I tend to not hold much weight, because when it's used properly, it's just like a pro feature that's like kind of like a shortcut. It's not required. It's like a right click in the sense that every element on the screen doesn't say, you can right-click me here, but you just kind of get used to it and you do it. And I use things like peek and pop all the time, and I'd be upset if they went away. There is definitely enough evidence in iOS 12 that the 6.1-inch phone this year does not have 3D touch. Like, they made the clear all notifications button work with long press. They made the camera roll thingy. Like, if you go into camera and you see the camera roll little thumbnail in the bottom left, on a 3D touch phone, you can force press that and get a preview. They're bringing that to long press as well. And there was another case that I've forgotten, but
the keyboard slider.
The keyboard, yes, yeah, yeah. So the keyboard trackpad, for, you know, ever since they brought it out, and this has been one of the things that people love the most about 3D touch, is you can force push on the keyboard and it turns into a little trackpad that you can drag around. On the iPads, they've had it for ages where you have it with two fingers. You put two fingers down and you drag around. But that was never on the phone. And in iOS 12, they brought it to non-3D touch phones by you long press on the space bar and then it turns into a trackpad and you can drag it around. So I think there's enough fuel to the fire to indicate that Quo is right and that the 6.1-inch phone this year is not going to have 3D touch. He hasn't commented on the next year's stuff, and the Barclay report is definitely not, I wouldn't, it's nowhere near a surefire hit at this point, right?
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to kill it completely. I think it will be like what happened with Touch ID getting replaced by Face ID. Like, the same general use cases. Not every edge case is covered. Like, just how Face ID isn't great when you're trying to unlock your phone flat on a table. Still not great at that.
Yep.
But close enough that most of those things will be addressed, whether it's through hover gestures, whether it's through just a different way to do 3D touch, like something along those lines. I don't think that they're just going to scrap the whole thing entirely and say, no, you can't peek and pop anymore. I think there has to be some sort of replacement, substitute.
Yeah, and I suppose it's possible that if 3D touch becomes pressure-sensitive base as some sort of hover system, then it maybe it's scalable to the iPad in a way that it hasn't been yet. That could be a benefit. One thing I want to mention while we're talking about 3D touch and force touch is that, you know, it's confusing to discuss these things because, like, all it is a press into the screen, not a long press, like press and wait for it to happen, but press with pressure, push into the screen. On the Apple Watch and the MacBook trackpad and then the standalone trackpad for the Mac, it's force touch because it's one surface, and no matter where you press with force, you get the secondary action. And on the iPhones, it's 3D touch because it's specific on the screen to where you press, you know, where on the icon or on the link or wherever. It's not one big button. It's a whole dimension, you know, a whole screen of various buttons that do different things. So that's the reason for force touch versus 3D touch. You know, not that force touch sounds aggressive and they move to 3D touch everything. It's still 3D on the iPhone and force on the Apple Watch and MacBook and standalone trackpad. And I think in those cases, like on the Apple Watch especially, it's like essential because, you know, screen size gets bigger this year, we expect, but it's still nice to have like a, no matter where you are in the app, you know, a way to just flag, pull up a bunch of menus for that app.
Yep.
You know, it's essential. Like, there's no Apple Watch without force touch. That's how you change your watch face and like customize it, you know. And there's no, like, they backed off of it a lot, but it's still essential to watchOS. On the Mac, you can totally ignore it. It doesn't matter. You have right click. On the iPhone,
well, it doesn't do the same job as right click. It does, normally it does like a quick look preview. But,
well, okay, on the Mac you've got right click or you've got three finger tap or like other ways to do it. Like,
yeah.
You know, they benefited from like the Taptic Engine where you get a little push, you know, if you're like at the end of like a scrubber bar or something like that. But the force touch part of it is like not essential, like it is on watchOS. On the iPhone, it's a new feature that, you know, some phones don't have it. iPad doesn't have it, but on iPhone, like, it's better if you have it than if you don't. So yeah, you know, and then maybe this hover touch stuff that Bloomberg reported before, you know, materializes soon, And that whole report wasn't that like a specific phone will get it, but that Apple's like developing it for future iPhones. It also mentioned like curved screens. It was like a whole, you know, long. And Mark Gurman, Mark's really good at this stuff of like, this is so obscure now, it'll make sense in a few years. You know, like he's pretty good at that. So it isn't that you know, I don't buy any of it. I think that it's probably, you know, R&D that's going to materialize, you know, in a few years. So, yeah, last thing I'll say on this is that in writing about HomeKit, you know, the Home app is on various platforms. I have to say, like, to activate a tile, if I want to be very descriptive for people that are approaching it at a novice level, to long press on the tile in the Home app, if you're on iPad or iPhones without 3D Touch, press into the screen to open up the tile in the Home app if it's an iPhone with 3D Touch, or literally secondary click, this is how I'm describing, like, right click, you know, because it could be a two-finger tap on a Mac to get what the show controls thing. Like, you can't even, like, press into your trackpad to open the Home tile which is, like, what it should be to me.
Marzipan is such a mess.
Yeah, it's a whole other thing. But it's like, you know, I wouldn't mind if there was some universal way to address all this, but right now I need to use three different sets of language to describe one action in the Home app, which is a whole side issue. But yeah, I that's my take on this, is that the Barclays thing, like, the story certainly made the rounds this week. Looking at the source material, I don't have it in front of me, but I did see it earlier this week. And I imagine that a lot of the people that discussed it didn't see the Barclays report, but it was like one vague line in a whole thing that was mostly about iPhones being released and AirPower being released.
Yeah, and it specifically was related to this supplier not being used anymore, not correct. Saying that 3D Touch, the feature, is going away. Because I bet people will be like, in 6 months, will be like, haha, about what they said, 3D Touch is going away, which, in fairness to them, is not what they said.
Correct. So, yeah, hopefully we added some value to that discussion that you might have heard before. But, you know, the source material is a little bit more specific than what the, you know, idea of 3D Touch is going away was. Last thing I want to mention is this week in HomeKit Weekly. I'm happy that I've been able to do these consecutively for a few weeks in a row again. I miss all of July, unfortunately. But it's been back for, I think, 3 weeks in a row now. And this week I looked at the Serena motorized shades by Lutron. And Lutron, they make the in-wall dimmer switches that work with HomeKit, where you control your lights without replacing your light bulbs. You replace the light switch, which is better in a lot of cases than Hue, because you don't need to leave the light switch on. It's a replacement light switch, and it's just so much more convenient that way. And with the HomeKit shades, the barrier for me has always been that they're very expensive to get into. A single window can cost $1,000 to have a HomeKit shade over, and a lot of homes have more than one window. That reason, I've not, as many HomeKit things as I have, I've not experienced this before. But the company reached out, I think, to a lot of publications, because, you know, over the summer, I saw a lot of these hands-on posts. But what they did was they offered an $800 allowance and a 40% discount on the balance. And then I still ended up paying money for these things. That's how expensive they are. But I got one unit, and it goes over my office window, and it's the first time I've been able to test this, and I think maybe I've got every category in HomeKit now that they have, except for a doorbell, which went away because no one does it yet. But I got to double check that. But I think I've got like one of everything, including like the sprinkler stuff. But I don't have alarm system. But the only thing I want to plug is, like, go and check it out. I think I ended up at like 1,500.
It is pretty damn cool.
Yeah, it's neat. There's no way I can do every room in this house, and I rent my house, so like if I move, these things are not fitted for every window. It's like fitted for this window, so you know it needs to be the same window or smaller to really be effective. But it's super cool. I was impressed with what Siri can do with natural language. I was ready to say that, like, if you say close the window a little, that it won't work, but it does. It closes by a 10% interval. So I was pretty impressed with it. The in HomeKit, the shade is called Window. Like, you can name it whatever, but that's what it's called. And at first I said blinds just naturally, even though it's like a basically like a curtain shade. And that worked. I said shade. I said window. It all worked. I was really impressed with it. And so check out the HomeKit Weekly post this week and see some stuff from Shade that I'll never be able to afford in every room. So that's the Happy Hour podcast for this week. Thanks for tuning in. If you have any feedback, you can email us at happyhour@95mac.com. You can also follow me on Twitter. I'm at Apollo Zach Benjamin. You are
BZA Mayo.
That is such a good song. And we'll be back next week. Bye, everybody.